So now we come to a very interesting model, one of my favorites, in fact, Hofstede's model of four cultural dimensions. In fact, in some books it is five, but in this particular chapter it is four. I think in one of the subsequent chapters, the fifth model has also been added, the fifth dimension. So right now I'll discuss the four which are there on the screen. Geert Hofstede, he developed a model of four cultural dimensions. He's a gentleman who did a study for IBM when IBM was multi-locational, and IBM has got one single corporate culture of its own. At the same time, they have different locations around the world. So just remember one thing, a company has its own culture. A company has its own culture, and within the culture, there are other subcultures that emerge, that come in. So an IBM in US has one culture, IBM culture, and the US social culture comes into the IBM office. The same IBM has an office, let us say, in Mumbai, and we have all the Indian IBM employees who go and work there. Now our social culture means the culture to which I belong as an Indian, just to give a generic term. That social culture and the IBM culture both will start clashing. They may clash or they may synergize, depends, right? So Geert Hofstede did this study, and he brought about this interesting thing called, he enunciated four, and later on it became five, four dimensions which are critically important when you study people across cultures. So if I am a company who wants to set up a office in another country, I must see whether my culture of this country and that culture, does it match? Because my employees will be working in that country and those employees will be working in my company. So we have to see that there's a match. If the cultures don't match, then we've got to do something about it. So four dimensions. One is a power distance, or we also call it as power distance index, PDI. Individualism versus collectivism. Uncertainty avoidance index again. Uncertainty avoidance and masculinity versus femininity. There are the four dimensions. So every society, every group of people are characterized by these four dimensions. Taking further, what is PD? It denotes the relational equations between superior and subordinate. Let me put it in a very different way. It's basically the accepted norm in a society wherein the people in power and the people are not in power, the haves and the have-nots, what sort of a distance they have to maintain. In some societies like the developed countries, you find that the haves and the have-nots, they mix freely. There's a lot of informality. You can call your boss by the first name. He wouldn't mind it in US. Power distance. In Eastern cultures, by and large, in Eastern cultures, beyond Turkey and this side of the world, you will find that most of the Eastern cultures, which are old cultures historically, these cultures, they have a very large distance between those in power and those not in power. The haves and the have-nots, there's a large distance. So they are not approachable. You can't go and talk to the head of an Indian company by the first name. It's not accepted. It's not a done thing. Culturally, we are like that. Right? So that's why we've seen in many organizations, IT companies particularly, we have the Indians and the people coming from US and other advanced countries to come and work. They address each other by the first name, but I've still found many Indians are uncomfortable when their first names are addressed. Although they may accept it on the face of it, but they still prefer being called as sir or mister or whatever, mister by the surname, right? No comment against anybody, it's the way we are. It's not a criticism, it's just the way we are. It's an observation, okay? So it denotes a relational equation between superiors and subordinates. In high power distance cultures, if you go to a place like that, benevolent, enabling, autocratic or paternalistic leadership prevails. In a country like India, for example, this is what happens. I'm on the top and what I say you're supposed to do, I'm the boss, I've earned my place, you should also earn your place and demand it. That type of a climate prevails. In low power distance cultures, like the advanced countries, it's participative, decision making, democratic style of leadership is prevalent. So these two you can see. So when you go to another country, you're given what is called as a cross-cultural training. Many of you people are listening to me who belong to the IT industry, you must have gone through cross-cultural training. They put you onto a training wherein, if you're, let's say you're going from India to a place like, say, Japan. for maybe for a year or so, though they'll tell you what are the things you should do in Japan socially, what are the things you should not do, what are the things you should do in the office, workplace, etc. Because although you're working for a company, you're dealing with people who are bringing the culture from their homes, from the society to which they belong. Right? Taking it further, individualism versus collectivism. Some cultures, again the Western cultures, the developed countries, they give a lot of importance to individualism as a value. A youngster, a kid, hardly about 8 or 9 years old, he starts sleeping in his own bedroom, alone. He takes his own decisions, it is encouraged. If a youngster of that age doesn't take a decision of his own, he is considered to be sissy, he is not considered to be okay with that value system of that society. It's maybe quite the reverse in a country like India, where we give a lot of importance to collectivism. How can you take a decision of buying a cycle on your own? A father may ask his son, you should have asked me. For everything that we do, most of us in India, we are collective in nature. Starting from buying a pen perhaps, I'm being bombastic, I know, to maybe, you know, to getting married. Of course, that is very, very critical in Indian situation. So anything and everything, we have a collective approach. That's why in Indian businesses also, we take collective decisions. We take a long time for things to materialize. I remember the times when I used to work for one of the companies as a technical head, and I used to travel to meet some of the guys from MNC, and one MNC head was talking to me across the table, and I had to take a decision, and it was very critical. And as we have it in organizations, I just told him that I have to get back to you. So he said, look, I put everything on the table. You have discussed what you have. I have discussed what I have. We have to just take a decision. What are you waiting for? I said, no, I have to get back to my superior. So he was quite flabbergasted. He says, how is it possible? He said, that's the way we work. That's the way we work. So it took some time. So one of the behaviors that impacts is this particular thing of individualism versus collectivism. Both have got their advantages as well as disadvantages. Western countries prefer individualism, whereas Eastern countries prefer collectivism. Because of the differences in preferences, when the cultures meet at a workplace, there is a likelihood of differences cropping up. One person likes to be left alone while having lunch. The other guy unknowingly goes and sits with him and starts involving him in a conversation. He may not like it. So we must learn to be sensitive to that. We love to mix in the workplace with our groups. Our informal groups are too many, whereas it's not the case elsewhere. They will keep work as work and office and home as home, but we like to mix. So that's the way we are. So we need to understand how to manage it rather than saying this is right and that is wrong. Okay. Next comes uncertainty avoidance. We are a lovely nation which works with a lot of uncertainties. You go to the railway station, the train with some timetable, something is given on the indicator saying the 11:28, the train is coming. 11:28 is over, 12 is over, yet the train doesn't come and we don't mind it. Somewhere we live in that floating time. Our uncertainty avoidance is, we are with it, we love it. Somewhere that's how we operate. Okay. Whereas if you go to advanced countries, you'll find that the uncertainty avoidance, they do not tolerate uncertainty. They want certain. If a thing is not certain, decisions do not get made. Here we will take a decision and see, we'll see about it. Let's cross the bridge when it comes, is one of the expressions we use sometimes, right? Nothing wrong about it. So we live in an environment where uncertainty avoidance is low. We live with uncertainty. Whereas the Western countries and advanced countries, they live with certainty. So when both of us come together, we could be having this clash of thinking. I'm not saying X is correct and Y is wrong, Y is not correct. Again, let me repeat, the whole discussion is based on two different types of way of working. Both of them are effective in their own way. Both have their advantages. Both have their disadvantages also. People from countries with low scores of uncertainty avoidance prefer a more flexible way of working. Flexible meaning, when it happens, let it happen. Some forces have to be aligned, etc., etc. So many things we do. That's the way we work, right? Next, we talk about masculinity versus femininity. The masculine gender is supposed to be aggressive, go-getter, achiever, etc. So some collective cultures of the world, they are of that type. the man and the woman in that culture would be of that disposition. Achieving becomes a major value, social value in that society, in the country. Femininity on the other side is more about the female attributes, caring, nurturing, being soft, helping type, healing type. So there are certain cultures in the world which are of that type collectively. Man and woman, both gender in that culture would be asked to follow value which is more of a femininity value. So the tendency to adopt masculine or feminine traits of behavior as an important social value is what is this? In masculinity, the dominant values are success, money and material things. And people in high masculinity countries are highly competitive and strive for economic growth. In femininity, people are caring for others and quality of life. People in high femininity countries favor friendly work environment and are relationship oriented. A typical traditional Indian company would be more in this category. Right? Next, Hofstede's model of four cultural dimensions, interpretation. How do we interpret this? So some points are given here. Now again, when I went through these points, let me caution you, these are changing. At the time of writing the book, these points have been valid, but with the changing times, with the movement of people in different parts of the world, this is slowly changing. But for the purpose of the exams and for the purpose of the study, I would like to run through it. Okay. Power distance is associated with collectivist behavior. Low power distance indicates high individualism. For example, countries like USA, Canada, Australia and UK are supposed to be falling in this category. But again, let me caution you, over the period of time, this population is also going through the transition. So not all Americans, not all Canadians, not all Australians you'll find having this type of a thing because of the changes that are happening. Nations are getting changed even on the Hofstede's models. Let me put it across to you. So take it as an indicator, but not as a know-all. It is not a pure one-to-one relation. It's an indication. By and large, when I meet an American, he may be like this. But I cannot slot him and say, hey, you're an American, so you'll be like this. No. This is one thing I want all of us to be aware of. Majority of the Western countries are in the category of low power distance and high uncertainty avoidance. Again, this is also changing. Majority of the Eastern countries are in the category of high power distance and low uncertainty avoidance. This is also changing. A lot of Indian companies which have become MNCs today, the IT majors, you find people are talking to each other informally. I am doing a leadership training for an IT major in Mumbai, and I noticed that the CEO and the junior guys, they talk to each other by one-to-one, by first names. So that's melting now. By and large, this is based on the old model which was created for the purpose of study, right? Religions and behavioral impact implications. Majority of the world population follows one of these four faiths. The whole world is divided into these four faiths: Hinduism, Islam, Christianity and Buddhism. Each of these faiths have in turn variations depicting the divisions of conditioning that people are subjected to. In Hinduism, there are a number of other sub-sects and sub-religions. Hundreds of them are there. So is it there in Islam, in Christianity, in Buddhism. We all know it. Right? Each religion differs in its preaching and guidelines to be followed. Every religion is talking about lovely things that mankind should do for this world and to make the world better. Every religion is talking about it. The impact of religions on business is felt through the behaviors of people that are rooted and influenced by the religion to which they belong. The impact of religions on business is felt through the behaviors of people. Which people? The people who are rooted and influenced by the religion to which they belong. This is very subtle. This is very subtle, very difficult to understand. But the fact is that my religion to which I belong, it does impact the way I think and take decisions. Globalization has brought people together due to the sheer nature of people movement from place to place. This has led to better understanding, acceptance and adaptation of different religion-driven behaviors of people. See, please get this very clear. We're talking about a lot of intolerance and stuff like that. I'm not getting into any politics or something. My own understanding, my own reading about people is, I think there's a lot of understanding of each other today thanks to our movements from place to place. We are moving across the nation to different cities and different towns. We are moving across the globe to different countries to work. And this, to my mind, and I think the author is also supporting it, it's brought up a lot of understanding of each other. There was a time when I was quarantined to think that mine is the best. But today, there's a lot of cross understanding of each other. And that is a very important thing. It's a very important thing because at the most fundamental identity of a human being lies the faith which he professes. At the most fundamental life, living identity of any human being is the faith that he professes. It's not about religion alone, it's about the faith, whatever he professes, because that is his identity, that is the purpose for which he is living. And that drives his entire life. We must be aware of this. Knowing that aspect of it, once you do, the connections become fantastically synergistic. It does. And that plays a major role. Now we talk about cultural diversity of workplace. I briefly covered it earlier. Same thing is being done in a different way now. Culture imposes norms for people that make them behave differently in different situations. Culture says do this, don't do this, do that, don't do that. There are do's and don'ts. Many of them are not written and given to you, but they have to be understood. When these norms are violated, people feel uneasy, anxious and threatened. In one pharma company where I was doing a training some years back, there's a culture of being extremely formal with each other. So there was a lunch break and at the table we are sitting for the lunch and there was a vice president sitting there and next to that there was another vice president, two of them were there, and HR head took me to the vice president's table to have lunch with them. And then I asked the HR head, how about you? She said, sir, we'll talk later. And then I asked her, why didn't you join? So these two were a little uncomfortable, looking at me, saying those things. Then nobody said anything. But I could sense it. Later on, I came to know from different sources that the VP would not like a junior person to sit at the table when having lunch. Now, that's the culture of that organization. And this lady was two levels below that VP. So they did not probably approve of it and she didn't want to get into any trouble. And I was totally ignorant about it initially. Later on I came to know. So this is something which is not told to you, but you need to sense it. The sensing skills one needs to develop. While working with people of other cultures, one must learn the cultural rules and degree to which the people hold them. This is very important. This is what is sensitizing. Globalization has provided companies to expand geographically. Increased competition has forced MNCs to recruit the best talent worldwide and not only home and the host country. Home means if a company belongs to India, it's an Indian company, home is Indian company. And if the company is setting up a base, let's say in Singapore, then the Singapore becomes a host country. They are playing a host to us. Okay. MNC workplaces are highly diversified with employees of different countries, religions, cultures, etc. Factors which affect cultural diversity. Increase in education opportunities. This is one of the loveliest things that has happened. Liberalization, globalization, privatization have led to increase in education facilities in developing and developed countries. All of us are aware of it. See the opportunities available for education. This very medium through which I'm talking to you, friends, isn't it a part of an educational opportunity given to you? Hundreds and thousands of you are going to be listening to me on this video. Is it not a part of a globalization of the education thing? Is it not technology in operation? This would have been unthought of some decades back, but today it's a reality. Advanced countries are accepting foreign students and also setting up campuses in developing countries. This has helped people of developing countries to acquire qualifications required to join MNC workforce. Offshore degrees, offshore postgraduates, offshore MBAs are being done in many places, many countries, right? Changing gender roles. Previously, women were confined to domestic activities. They were at home. There's a remarkable shift in the number of women focusing towards their career, resulting in increase in women workforce. The shift is due to rise in education of women, economic independence and utilizing skills and talents. Change in the glass ceiling barrier in many companies. Glass ceiling means a type of a effect, a type of a phenomenon in which ladies rose only to a certain point of growth in the company. In terms of position in a company, that is called the glass ceiling effect. They couldn't rise beyond a point, and there were many reasons for that. Either they had their own issues being the gender that they are, because they had to run the home, the family, etc., and or some issues with the presumably by the company which did not want a lady to go up. So there were a lot of debates. There are still debates going on the glass ceiling effect. But the point is, today that's reduced to a large extent. You take a handful of MNCs, you'll find the top level, at the CEO level, at the board level, we have a lot of ladies who are there and taking strategic roles. Right? Changing roles of minorities. Now, this minority is not about the minority which we talk in India. The minorities are the people who are having less skills. Let me read it from the thing. Providing reservations to students of minorities in various countries. Now, please don't mistake this to the minorities we are talking about. I would use the word have-nots. The people who are not being able to give the push due to some reason. It's not a political word, minority in this case. It's something people who didn't have a push. They are the ones who have been given the push. They have been given that particular type of a fillip. And it helps them to acquire education and skills to join domestic and MNC force, workforce. Increase in employees for minorities through preferential treatment. A youngster comes from a very poor background, very talented. You put her into the company and you start giving her little extra training. And that takes her to the heights. That's being done in many places today. Let's not link these minorities with the minority which we talk in politics or the nation. It's very different. Elimination of employment discrimination by taking initiatives to ensure proper minority representation within the organization. See that everybody gets an opportunity to prove himself and herself. Mobility of human resources. Globalization has caused expansion of industrial and business activities to various countries. Many manufacturing bases are set up in developing countries. There's a free flow of resources across borders. And people are moving from place to place based on demand for skills. Re-employing the aging population. Very interesting. I got relatives of mine who have gone into the second and the third career. There's a rise in aging population in advanced countries. It's also happening in India. Globalization and dynamism in job structures have changed the mindset of aging people, and the concept of mental age has emerged. MNCs are employing psychologically young people to increase productive workforce. The physical age, there was a retirement at the age of 58 or 60 in companies. Today, that's being re-looked into. I know many friends of mine, senior to me, who have retired. And they have been taken back in the company to do some consulting work. They have been given different designations, but they are as good as regular employees because their intellectual capital is very high and strong. They are pretty good in their mental age. They are still young at heart. They are willing to learn. So that is being given rethinking. So it's not about the physical age alone. It's about the mindset which you maintain and carry as you keep aging. That's an important aspect of cultural diversity. Managing diversity at workplace, opportunities and challenges, some of them are listed here. The opportunities are, it gives you competitive advantage when you have a workforce which is varied in nature, multi-ethnic unified societies, multi-racial, multi-ethnic, effective implementation of strategies, it becomes easier because if one cultural thinker cannot do that, another cultural thinker is able to do that. One person, one type of culture has got certain types of naturally built skills coming from that region. So they do it better. That's where the implementation becomes easier and effective. Repels undesirable unity in employees. Undesirable unity, inverted commas, means what? Forming of cliques and informal groups which try to do negative things in the company. My group, my region, people from the same university, you know, these are the small cliques people form. That's done away with because merit, excellence and process is given rewards. Challenges are potential source of conflict. The very reason why the opportunities are also there are challenges. Potential source of conflict. Perceptual differences. When I do not understand what you are talking and you do not understand what I am talking and I am not willing to learn, then the perceptual differences take place. In one culture, shaking hands is perfectly okay. In another culture, they say we should not touch each other. In Indian culture, where the traditional people say namaste. So these perceptual differences can create a trouble, can create a problem. It's a challenging thing. Delay in decision making. Communication distortions. I say something and you mean something else. In it's even a simple thing like a body language, you know, shaking your head versus nodding your head. In certain Indian cultures, when you do this, it is in English, it is saying no. But in certain Indian cultures, when I shake my head from side to side, it is yes. So this communication distortion can happen if I'm talking to someone unknowingly and not being aware of this type of body language differences. Okay. Opportunities. Okay. All those things are explained now. Competitive advantage. Employees with diversified backgrounds brings original ideas and approaches. Diverse knowledge and skills contribute to formulation and implementation of appropriate strategies. This improves productivity, profitability, market share, leadership, etc. Okay. Competitive advantage. Diversity contributes to competitiveness. How does it contribute? It attracts the best of resources. That's what is the first point. It's got a marketing advantage because it understands the tastes and the preferences of customers of all segments, income brackets and religion. Diversity not only in the workforce but diversity in the customer base also. Same product is being sold in different segments of the world with different positioning. So I have a marketing advantage. A thing like a car has got a certain meaning in India to the person who buys it as different from a person who buys it in US. So that being a diverse base of customers, I am able to position my car accordingly depending upon which culture I am selling the car to. Flexibility and adaptability. Diverse workforce enables MNCs to respond to the demands of the environment and implement strategies based on the environment. Harmony. Diverse workforce avoids conflicts and disputes and strives to create congenial working relationship. Every person in a diverse group is always alert that he shouldn't get into he should be discarded. So he always strives to bring about harmonious relationship. I've seen this. Cost saving. Diverse workforce results in increase in productivity, sourcing cheaper resources, more innovation, which all contribute to cost savings. Appropriate strategies. Diverse workforce brings experienced, broad-minded and talented personnel who help to formulate and implement appropriate strategies. Multi-ethnic unified societies. Employees coming from different countries, race, religion and cultures develop working and social relations among themselves. They share their values and practices and respect others, and they generate unity among diversity. Effective implementation of strategies elaborated here. Multi-thinking environment enables employees to analyze problems from multiple angles based on multiple backgrounds. The problems are discussed with an open mind. Collaborative approach to strategies is adopted and it nullifies ego-centered and male-dominated situations. How does it repel undesirable unity among employees? Monocultural workforce used to form trade unions and question organization decisions. Diverse workforce employees build careers on individual strengths, skills and talents, and they focus on mutual goals. Challenges. Further elaborated, potential source of conflict, high turnover among women and minorities, low morale and intergroup conflicts. This is likelihood if the top management is not properly driving it. The top management in a culturally diverse company has to be extremely matured. Social maturity is what I call it, social maturity. They must be wide traveled, they must know various cultures and how they respond, and they must be able to handle conflicts or handle some challenges as and when they come. Perceptual difference, prejudices and inappropriate remarks about religion, sex, ethnic groups may cause misunderstandings. I've explained about how shaking hands and namaste, or for the matter hugging, is okay in one culture but not okay in another culture. Delayed decision making, cultural differences cause employees to take more time to understand viewpoints and develop alternative solutions. Cultural differences cause employees to take more time to understand viewpoints and develop alternative solutions. When I, as an Indian, is interacting with a Japanese, okay, just to give an example, he may not be understanding what I mean when I say something, and he may not want to take a decision till he understands it. And I may be left wondering that why is it that the decision is not being taken by him. This I've experienced. So because of this, there's a delayed decision making. So it's good to arrive at a common platform by mutual training and informal talk, understanding each other's culture, asking them questions. What is it that I should not do which will give you a wrong signal? And they also asking the same question to you and you telling them. It becomes very easy to understand each other's culture. Communication distortions. It occurs in terms of language, social barriers, psychological barriers and semantic barriers. Word skipper. The way the words are being put. Now we talk about virtual organizations as a concluding part of the discussion. What are virtual organizations? These are organizations wherein I have my own virtual organization. You are working from your home or your office and you have your colleagues who are working from their homes or their offices in a different geographical location. Thereby, we are reducing the cost of having an office and our efficiency improves. We don't have to travel to a common place and we have a lot of resourceful energy being spent. People are given the responsible freedom to act with excellence and commitment. That's what a virtual organization actually does. This has come up in recent times because of space becoming expensive in cities and commuting becoming too long. So the virtual organization concept has just cropped up in the last about a decade or so. Features of a virtual organization: flexible work, time, place, power, job sharing, loose organizational boundaries, de-jobbing, multi-skilling, dependency on information technology and customer-centric. Okay. What are the behavioral implications? Human resources are a loose web of people. People are hired for short-term projects based on demand. Of course, that is not done in all virtual organizations. We have virtual organizations which are there as permanent employees who are working in their different locations where they live. Career planning and development based on projects. Autonomy at work but accountable for performance, very important. I'll give you all the freedom. Now, in IT companies, I've noticed people are asked to work, are allowed to work from home. Now, that's a type of a virtual organization, a variation of it. Emotional and attitudinal quotient is prime factor for employee selection. Okay, so with that, we come to the next one. Organizational activities have become more intellectual. That's why we need to have learning organizations. What's a learning organization? A learning organization is one wherein the employees are constantly put through skills development, learning new skills, unlearning the old, relearning the new, and setting the new into a new habit, only to go back to the cycle all over again. Unlearning, relearning, and setting a behavior. And then that setting of the new behavior will again on another day becoming an unlearning and then relearning and then setting another new behavior. Knowledge is a competitive advantage. Information knowledge is a competitive advantage today. Complex nature of business environment, cultural unification, increased customer awareness, increased pace of innovations and change in employee attitude. With this, my dear friends, I conclude this session. Thank you very much and all the best.